Hi, it's Richard. All of us at Parcast want to thank you for your continuing support throughout the year. Parcast couldn't be what it is today without you. We also wanted to give you a heads up that we're taking a break for the holidays and won't be back until after the new year. But since the season is all about giving, we do have something special lined up for the next 2 weeks, so be sure to tune in. In the meantime, enjoy the season, and we'll be back the first week of January with your regular programming. Have a happy and safe New Year.
Due to the graphic nature of today's episode, listener discretion is advised. This episode features adult themes and descriptions of childbirth. Caution is advised for listeners under 13.
It was a chilly October morning in Godalming, England, 1726. A crowd gathered inside the Toft family home, equally horrified and fascinated by what was happening inside. Many of them had been there for days and still couldn't believe what they were witnessing.
Mr. John Howard, an obstetrician, was attending to 25-year-old Mary Toft. The young woman held her stomach and cried out.
She was giving birth, but this was no ordinary delivery.
As the pain intensified, Mary's womb began bleeding. Her contractions grew more intense. With a grim face, Mr. Howard coached her through the agony. Meanwhile, Mary's mother-in-law, Anne, tried to keep her calm.
At long last, something emerged. Mr. Howard held it up for everyone to see.
The crowd gasped in horror. Instead of a newborn child, Howard held the head of a deceased rabbit.
When our bodies fail, we trust doctors to diagnose the problem. But medicine isn't always an exact science. Sometimes it's a guessing game with life or death stakes.
This is Medical Mysteries, a Spotify original from Parcast. I'm Molly.
And I'm Richard. This episode of Medical Mysteries will be our last for a while as we go on hiatus.
From the 19th century patient known as the Elephant Man to the bubonic plague, we've enjoyed bringing you these sometimes heartbreaking, other times triumphant, and always mysterious stories.
You can find episodes of Medical Mysteries and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today, we're bringing you a special one-part episode on Mary Toft, the 25-year-old woman who shocked 18th-century Europe by giving birth to animals. We'll follow the story of her pregnancies as everyone, right up to King George I, tried to solve the mystery.
We have all that and more coming up. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Money Maker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Money Maker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
In the fall of 1726, Mary Toft started giving birth to mangled animals. Doctors throughout Europe were gobsmacked. No one had any idea how such a thing could happen. To fully understand this phenomenon, we'll need to start at the very beginning.
At about age 18, Mary wed a cloth worker named Joshua Toft. His ancestors had worked in the wool trade for generations, but Joshua didn't possess much skill or talent in this line of work. As a result, he struggled to provide for Mary, which became an issue when they had children.
In 1723, Mary gave birth to a girl named Anne, but during her infancy, the child died from a bout of smallpox.
Smallpox was a deadly infectious disease that caused flu-like symptoms accompanied by rashes and scabs. The virus caused countless deaths for more than 1,000 years before it was finally eradicated in 1980.
But the Tofts wouldn't let this tragedy stand in the way of making a family. A year after Anne's death in 1724, Mary and Joshua tried again. This time, they had a son named James.
Joshua realized that three mouths were a lot to feed on his meager income. To get by, Mary began working as an agricultural day laborer. Each day, she plowed, sowed seed, and harvested crops. It was in these fields that Mary's infamous journey began.
On April 23, 1726, Mary was 5 weeks pregnant with another child. That afternoon, she was weeding in the field when several rabbits crossed her path. Mary chased one, hoping to cook it for dinner, but she was too slow.
That night, Mary had a vivid dream that she was back in those fields surrounded by bunnies. The following day, she had an intense craving for rabbit meat. Only the elite farmed bunnies at this time, so the Tofts couldn't afford the cost. But as the weeks went by, Mary yearned for the expensive delicacy.
That August, 4 months after her dream, Mary began having terrible abdominal pains. She experienced heavy bleeding, and just a few months before her expected due day, she had what was at least her second miscarriage.
Anne Toft, Mary's mother-in-law, was a midwife. She helped Mary through the miscarriage, and the family never consulted a doctor. But instead of a stillborn baby, Mary gave birth to a large, misshapen piece of tissue, as big as her arm.
The event was strange yet heartbreaking, and it took a toll on Mary's body. She continued to lose blood and suffer severe pains for several days after the experience.
It's not unusual for the aftermath of a miscarriage to last days or even weeks. Symptoms can include vaginal bleeding, abdominal cramps, breast discomfort, and leaking milk. Pregnancy hormones also remain in the blood for about a month, so a swollen belly, strange appetite, and fatigue may persist.
It made sense that Mary was still in physical and emotional pain, but nobody could have predicted what came next.
A month later, on September 27th, Mary's neighbor, Mrs. Gill, heard the woman screaming and rushed to help. She found Mary writhing in pain while clutching her stomach.
Before Mrs. Gill could get help, she saw a strange shape emerge from Mary's vagina. This time, it was not an ambiguous fleshy tissue. It was the dead, mangled body of a cat.
The Tofts couldn't make sense of the birth, so they decided to send the cat's body to Mr. John Howard. Howard was a respected obstetrician who lived in Guilford, a town about 5 miles north of Mary's home. In the early 18th century, medical practitioners known as surgeons weren't required to attend medical school, which is why Mr. Howard was not referred to as a doctor. Still, he was seen as a talented medical expert and likely had years of training as an apprentice.
Upon receiving the news, Mr. Howard was baffled. Never in his 30 years of medicine had he seen a woman give birth to an animal. But he didn't rule it out as impossible. After all, the 1700s were an exciting time for scientific discoveries.
A movement called the Age of Enlightenment brought new advancements in philosophy, communications, politics, and science. Just before this era, Galileo Galilei, a famous mathematician, astronomer, and physicist, introduced the idea of the scientific method. This process called for researchers to collect measurable, observable, and verifiable evidence in an experiment to prove their hypothesis.
Up until this point, the credibility of experts came from how well they argued their point. But the scientific method meant that researchers could no longer make claims without irrefutable proof. This was an exciting challenge for many great minds, and one of the reasons Mary's case attracted so much attention. Doctors wouldn't simply accept or deny that Mary could deliver animals. They wanted to prove it.
This respect for research wasn't shared by all. False ideas about medicine were still spread by those deemed as quacks, fakers, and charlatans. These people falsely claimed to have medical knowledge to earn a quick buck. Unfortunately, these shams had a lot of influence on how the public viewed health and medicine.
Take, for example, John Wesley's 1740s text, Primitive Physic, or An Easy and Natural Method of Curing Most Diseases. Wesley was neither a doctor nor a medical expert. He was a religious cleric.
Despite his lack of expertise, Wesley's book recommended treatments for a variety of ailments. He claimed the best cure for asthma was living a fortnight on boiled carrots only.
The antidote for intense stomach pains was to hold a live puppy constantly on the belly. Meanwhile, electrocution was Wesley's cure for a myriad of other health issues, from heart palpitations to toothaches.
False medicine and newfound scientific standards were at odds when Mr. Howard first heard about Mary. The story sounded impossible. Still, Howard felt inclined to prove or disprove whether humans could give birth to animals.
If confirmed, it would be the most amazing medical discovery of the century. So, without delay, Mr. Howard traveled to Godalming, England, to examine Mary himself.
As soon as he arrived, Anne Toft showed Mr. Howard more pieces of the cat. She claimed her daughter-in-law had delivered them overnight. Neighbors also said they'd witnessed it.
Upon closer examination, the obstetrician confirmed that Mary was experiencing contractions and that they were unusually strong. But this didn't convince Mr. Howard right away. He told the Tofts he wouldn't believe Mary was gestating animals until she delivered a head before him. It's a mystery why he felt this in particular would be undeniable proof, but 2 weeks later, Howard got his wish.
He rushed back to Godalming after Mary claimed to deliver the jawbone of an animal. With a wave of blood, two more pieces of bone emerged from between Mary's legs. In disbelief, Mr. Howard assembled the pieces and made a startling discovery. It belonged to the head of a rabbit.
At that moment, Howard became the first physician to vouch for Mary's miraculous births. But he was certainly not the last. Mary's rabbits would attract some of the most powerful people in Europe, propelling her into infamy.
Coming up, doctors across the continent stake their reputations on Mary Toft.
Hi everyone, it's Molly. If you haven't had a chance to check out the playful new podcast, Blind Dating, now's the time to binge what you've missed before catching all new episodes every Wednesday. In this Spotify original from Parcast, we're expanding the places you can meet your match with a twist you'll never see coming. Join host Tara Michelle as she introduces one hopeful single to two strangers in a voice-only call. Through a series of illuminating games and questions, the trio will get to know one another without the distraction of appearances. But in the end, is personality enough for these strangers to fall head over heels, Or, once the cameras are turned on, will they head for the hills? Connect with new episodes of Blind Dating every Wednesday. You can find and follow Blind Dating free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Too Faced Cosmetics and Better Than Sex Mascara. The name literally says it all. This mascara is that good. There is a formula for anyone and everyone available in original, waterproof, and chocolate that thickens, lengthens, and curls to give you all the drama and volume. Or try the new Naturally Better Than Sex. It has a 98% naturally derived formula. Shop Too Faced Better Than Sex Mascara at Sephora today.
And now, back to the story.
In 1726, 25-year-old Mary Toft gave birth to pieces of deceased cats and rabbits. Family members, neighbors, and even an obstetrician named Mr. Howard believed that Mary was a medical phenomenon.
By November, Mary was delivering the equivalent of one whole rabbit every other day. After the ninth bunny, Mr. Howard moved Mary to his house in Guildford, England, to examine her more closely.
The doctor paid for Mary's living expenses and gave her husband, Joshua, money to support their two-year-old son. Howard wanted no distractions from the Tofts while he studied Mary.
Every day, pieces of rabbit would come from Mary's womb. They were apparently accompanied by blood and amniotic fluid, which made her case all the more convincing.
During birth, the average woman loses a pint of blood. This is because the placenta, or baby's nutrient source, detaches from the uterus, opening up blood vessels in the womb.
Amniotic fluid surrounds the baby in the uterus. This liquid is a combination of water from the mother, urine from the baby, and essential nutrients like hormones and antibodies. Typically, the amniotic sac breaks in the first stage of labor, which also made Mary's case hard to refute.
The obstetrician also developed a hypothesis to explain a pulsating movement on Mary's right side. He thought it came from Mary's right fallopian tube, where he believed the bunnies were formed. These tubes connect the ovaries to the uterus, acting as a pathway for a fertilized egg.
An ectopic pregnancy, or tubal pregnancy, occurs when the egg implants itself in a fallopian tube without making its way to the uterus. But in a normal pregnancy, nothing forms inside these tubes. Regardless, Mr. Howard didn't seem to know this information or take it into consideration.
After assessing Mary, Howard wrote to many physicians and noblemen about his discovery. On October 22, 1726, the British Journal got a hold of these accounts and printed Mary's story.
London buzzed with the fantastic news. Mary Toft was the mother of rabbits. Was she a fraud or a medical miracle? People were split down the middle.
Word of Mary spread to the royal court. When King George I heard about the case, he developed a personal curiosity. He ordered an amateur scientist named Samuel Molyneux and the royal court's anatomist, Nathaniel St. Andre, to visit Mary in Guildford.
St. Andre was especially up for the task. At the time, he was still trying to prove himself in the medical field. But the king felt he was the perfect man to examine Mary Toft. So on November 15, 1726, the two officials arrived at Mr. Howard's property just in time. Mary was about to deliver her 15th rabbit.
As soon as St. Andre saw the top half of that animal emerge from between Mary's legs, he was hooked. The carcass still had its lungs, so St. Andre extracted the organs for further examination. When he placed them in water, the lungs floated to the top of the bowl.
At the time, this experiment was used in autopsies to determine if a stillborn had died in the womb. If the lungs sank, it was because the baby never breathed air. If the lungs floated, it proved the baby had been alive outside of the womb and gotten oxygen.
Because the rabbit's lungs could float, It proved that the bunny had breathed air at some point in time. Even though it emerged from Mary dead and torn in two pieces, the rabbit must have lived outside of Mary's womb at some point.
But Saint Andre did not form this conclusion. He declared the lungs floated because they did not adhere to the laws of physics. In other words, Mary's births were defying the laws of nature.
It's unclear why Saint Andre performed the floating lung test if he planned to ignore the results. Maybe he wanted to believe Mary was performing a miracle, and proving Mary could give birth to animals would undoubtedly give Saint Andre the credibility he was searching for.
For the next few hours, he waited patiently for the bottom half of the rabbit. Saint Andre wanted to see how well the two pieces fit into a hole. Later that day, Mary delivered the second half of the bunny from the diaphragm down. The halves fit together perfectly.
Upon further examination, Saint Andre and Molyneux found pellets of rabbit dung in the rabbit's rectum. This was also abnormal for a rabbit fetus to exhibit, and it was another sign the animal had eaten and lived outside of Mary's womb. But again, Saint Andre ignored the evidence. He ruled it another biological anomaly.
Over the next several days, the two court officials made many discoveries about Mary. Saint Andre dissected the first cat Mary had given birth to, and he realized the animal was missing a liver. The carcass was also said to contain the backbone of an eel. But instead of seeing this as suspicious, Saint Andre, Molyneux, and Mr. Howard hypothesized that a variety of animals had somehow combined inside of Mary's womb.
Saint Andre also discovered there was no longer bleeding or amniotic fluid during the births. The physicians could not determine why this had stopped.
Another issue Saint Andre noticed was Mary's closed cervix. The cervix is the tissue that connects the vagina and the uterus. It only opens significantly when a woman is in or close to labor. Mary's cervix, however, remained closed throughout the delivery process. Something that hinted once more at the impossible.
Again, this detail was overlooked by Saint Andre. Instead, he decided to examine Mary's birth canal before her next delivery. He confirmed it was empty. But a short while later, Mary delivered another rabbit head. This solidified Saint Andre's belief that the births were real. If the vagina was clear prior to birth, the bunnies had to come from deeper inside of Mary.
Saint Andre and Molyneux returned to London with Mary's rabbits and presented their findings to the king. Saint Andre declared that there was no way Mary could have faked these births. She was, in fact, a medical marvel.
Now, King George wanted to know why this had happened. Doctors and news outlets had already formed several theories on how Mary gave birth to rabbits. One explanation, of course, was bestiality. Newspapers suggested that Mary copulated with a rabbit, causing her to give birth to bunnies.
Intercourse with animals was seen as a scandal, not a crime in the 18th century. In fact, it wasn't outlawed in England until 2004. However, there wasn't any scientific credibility to this theory. Instead, the most supported explanation was called maternal imagination.
Maternal imagination was a popular belief in 16th to 18th century Europe. Doctors thought that if a woman saw or felt something that made a strong impression while she was pregnant, it could leave an imprint on the fetus.
For example, if a pregnant woman were to see and think about someone with six fingers, she would have a baby with the same abnormality. Or if she thought too much about frogs, her child could develop webbed toes.
As medicine advanced, maternal imagination became the go-to explanation for many birth defects and physical abnormalities, well before doctors understood any real cause.
Dr. John Mowbray was a London obstetrician that greatly supported maternal imagination when Mary's story took off. He also believed in creatures called Suderkins. According to him, these mole-like animals were born from Dutch women who stood too close to hot stoves.
If maternal imagination was to blame, Mary's encounter with the field rabbits that April may have affected her pregnancy. Her obsession with the animals could have led to her miscarriage and subsequent bunny births.
St. Andre and Mr. Howard both accepted this as a potential cause to Mary's condition. However, King George was not as convinced. He asked a skeptical German surgeon named Cyriacus Ahlers to visit Mary and report his opinion as well.
Ahlers arrived in Guildford on November 20th, 1726, with a plan. He suspected that Mary and Mr. Howard were faking the births, so he pretended to believe everything they said. If they perceived him as gullible, perhaps Ahlers would have a better chance at catching them in their lies.
Upon examination, Ahlers noted that Mary did not show signs of pregnancy. Her stomach wasn't swollen, she wasn't bleeding, and she hadn't produced milk. There was also no sign of the amniotic fluid as Mr. Howard had reported in earlier births.
Ahlers was also suspicious that the rabbits came out of Mary in pieces. But Mr. Howard explained that Mary's strong convulsions rubbed the fur and tore the animals apart.
While Mary was in labor, Mr. Howard allowed Ahlers to reach in and feel the emerging rabbit. Unfortunately, not being an obstetrician, Ahlers accidentally pushed the creature further into Mary's birth canal.
Mary screamed in pain. After this, Howard refused to let Ahlers deliver more rabbits. But this only deepened the doctor's skepticism. He felt it was part of the scheme, preventing him from getting too close to Mary and noticing their foul play.
At the end of the day, Ahlers told Mary that he believed the pregnancies were real and offered her a bit of money. But on Monday, November 21st, 1726, he returned to London and told the king it was a hoax. Ahlers suggested that the animal remains were cut with a knife, not destroyed inside Mary's womb.
St. Andre heard about Ahlers' presentation and feared that his reputation was on the line. He'd publicly claimed that Mary was authentic. If he couldn't prove the births were real, St. Andre risked losing his title.
He rushed back to Guildford on November 23rd, where he examined Mary again. Within the next few days, he had his proof. During Mary's delivery, she produced a sort of mucus-like membrane, something she'd never done before.
St. Andre and Mr. Howard agreed that this was part of the chorion, which, along with the endometrium, forms the placenta. It's the outermost membrane of a mammal embryo that helps feed the fetus as it grows. In their mind, this definitely signified pregnancy.
Meanwhile, Mary's health seemed to be getting worse. She complained of being in more pain than she was weeks ago. St. Andre found blood and mucus in her urine. Her pulse was irregular, and her tongue was white.
He knew that these were signs of an infection. Unfortunately, the doctors were more interested in validating Mary than treating her.
St. Andre rushed back to London. In front of the king and his court, he presented his case once again. St. Andre dissected the rabbits in front of a crowd, explaining the organs were too small for a living rabbit. He claimed this proved they were fetal while in Mary's womb.
As his final piece of evidence, St. Andre showed off the placenta and informed them that one only develops when there's a fetus to feed.
This was the smoking gun. The court was convinced Mary Toft was capable of breeding rabbits.
Newspapers exploded with excitement. St. Andre and Mr. Howard quickly rose to fame, while Ollers fumed. He knew something wasn't right. He needed to prove Mary's fraudulence. Meanwhile, Mary grew sicker by the day.
Coming up, a bathhouse porter holds Mary's biggest secret.
And now, back to the story.
In 1726, 25-year-old Mary Toft shocked Europe by giving birth to rabbits. For weeks, the continent's most respected doctors examined Mary to determine her validity. And King George's court anatomist, Nathaniel St. Andre, published his professional opinion, stating the births were real.
After St. Andre presented his findings to the royal court, the king ordered more studies be done on Mary Toft. If this woman was giving birth to rabbits, it was a medical phenomenon that needed to be understood. The king wanted the best surgeons and obstetricians on the case. Sir Richard Manningham was one of them.
On November 28th, Sir Richard and St. Andre arrived in Guildford. Richard's first examination of Mary seemed obvious. Her stomach showed no signs of pregnancy, her vagina was clear, her cervix was closed. She didn't appear pregnant at all, except for the fact that her right side was hard, exactly where her fallopian tube was.
To Sir Richard, this indicated that something was growing inside of Mary, but he wanted to witness her labor before determining the outcome.
St. Andre and Sir Richard waited for hours, but no delivery. So they went to a nearby inn for a quick meal. Less than an hour later, Howard burst into the pub carrying a slimy organ in a piece of paper.
While they were gone, Mary had delivered more placenta. Instead of being impressed, Sir Richard was annoyed.
The whole reason he was in Guildford was to observe Mary and her deliveries. He should have been summoned before the birth, and he reprimanded Mr. Howard for not doing so. He added, "In any case, it looks more like half a hog's bladder than a placenta."
Later that night, Sir Richard delivered more of the membrane from Mary, but her cervix was still closed. Sir Richard said he would not be convinced until he delivered something from the uterus while the cervix was open.
At that moment, Mary started to cry. After all she'd been through, the scrutiny, poking, and prodding, she was devastated that Sir Richard didn't believe her.
Mary didn't deliver anything else for the remainder of Sir Richard's stay. She experienced labor pains for several hours, but nothing came. Sir Richard believed her agony was real, but he wasn't sure what had caused it.
St. Andre asked Sir Richard not to publish his findings until he examined Mary further, and Sir Richard agreed, not because he cared about the anatomist's reputation, but because he still didn't understand Mary's abdominal movements or the hardness in her right side.
The next day, Mary was moved to a public bathhouse in Leicester Fields to be closer to London. King George wanted as many physicians as possible to examine Mary, and this location was easily accessible.
St. Andre sent letters to noteworthy physicians inviting them to come see Mary. One such surgeon was James Douglas, a famous anatomist that specialized in women's pelvic organs.
Douglas was already convinced Mary's births were a hoax. He argued that there was no scientific evidence to suggest a human could deliver animals. Instead, Douglas suspected that Mary was putting the rabbits into her vagina while people weren't looking. As a result, he stressed the importance of not leaving Mary by herself.
Douglas then examined Mary carefully. He felt her abdomen as she went through one of her pulsations. He declared the movements were simply muscle contractions, something Mary could control herself.
In the meantime, the bathhouse became a tourist destination for doctors, noblemen, and scientists alike. Though interested, many were disappointed when they learned that Mary's births had stalled.
After several days in the bathhouse, Mary stopped having labor pains. Sir Richard and Douglas thought it was suspicious that Mary no longer delivered the rabbits under strict surveillance. They decided it was time to go public with their skepticism.
St. Andre and Mr. Howard begged them for more time. They were sure Mary would give birth to more animals. They just had to be patient.
Sir Richard and Douglas obliged, but not because they believed Mary would prove them wrong. They wanted to know how the hoax was executed before they published their results. Meanwhile, they alerted the Justice of the Peace, Lord Thomas Onslow, about their suspicions.
A Justice of the Peace acted as a judge and, in this case, a detective also. They had the power to hear and determine felonies and petty offenses, and sometimes they partook in the investigation. Pretending to give birth to rabbits wasn't exactly a crime, but Mary's scandal had taken on a life of its own.
Lord Thomas began his investigation by traveling to Guildford. There he interviewed local rabbit sellers. Many of them told Lord Thomas that Mary's husband, Joshua, bought rabbits at the time of his wife's births.
When Lord Thomas asked Joshua about this, he said he'd purchased the rabbits for Mary to eat. This seemed plausible, but the cook at Mr. Howard's house said she never once prepared rabbit for Mary.
Meanwhile, Douglas was convinced that Mary's births were fake, but he couldn't deny that she was seriously ill. Now, Mary experienced frequent seizures. One even left her unconscious for several hours.
On December 4th, 1726, Mary's violent pains returned. The agony seemed so real that even Sir Richard expected there'd be a birth. But after several hours of no delivery, a bathhouse porter named Thomas Howard pulled Sir Richard aside.
According to Thomas, Mary had given him money to find a small rabbit and bring it back to her. This was the proof that Douglas and Sir Richard had been searching for.
Before they could act on this information, Mary cried out like never before. For the first time, Sir Richard saw severe swelling above her cervix. He wondered if this time something might actually come out from Mary's uterus.
All of a sudden, the signs of labor halted. Mary went quiet and limp. There was no birth. Mary appeared to be a fraud after all.
A local justice of the peace, Sir Thomas Clarges, was summoned to the bathhouse that night to take the porter's interview. Shortly afterwards, Mary was taken into custody.
For the next 2 days, Mary was bombarded by doctors and law enforcement, but she maintained that she was truly pregnant with rabbits.
Sir Richard threatened Mary that if she didn't admit her fraudulence, he would conduct painful experiments to discover the truth about her pregnancies. She had until the next morning to confess, or else he would slice her open.
On December 7th, 1726, Mary Toft gave in. She finally confessed that the births were faked. The truth came out slowly over the next couple of days.
According to Mary, her family and Mr. Howard had helped her procure the rabbits. They skinned, dissected them, and inserted them into her vagina, just like Douglas had suspected.
Mary insisted it was her mother-in-law, Ann Toft's, idea. Her miscarriage really did happen, although it was not as violent as Ann had described. And Mary had delivered pieces of tissue, a common symptom during a pregnancy or miscarriage, but nothing as large as her arm.
Mary also spoke about her family's motives. Some authors say she claimed the hoax was staged to escape poverty. She wanted to gain fame and money so she would never have to work again.
This idea makes sense, but some historians think her motive was more complicated. For one, the Tofts did not make that much money off of their scam. Some of the doctors gave them enough cash to get by, but there was no substantial wealth.
A few researchers think the shame of Mary's miscarriage spurred her into action. Dangerous and unsuccessful births were common in the 18th century, but the blame was almost always put on the mother. This may have been Mary's way of avoiding persecution.
Karen Harvey, a professor of cultural history at the University of Birmingham, has a third theory. She notes that some have seen the Toft case as a political statement on certain societal norms.
Typically, in 1726, only the wealthy could breed, sell, and buy rabbits. This was the case for other animals and crops, too. During Mary's time, there had been several protests against this inequality.
If a poor, unknown day laborer could give birth to rabbits, the animals couldn't be only for the elite. And if the upper class fell for the hoax, which they did, their superiority would prove unjustified.
Now let's talk about how Mary pulled it off. Her body was still recovering from the miscarriage when her miracle births began. This is why fluid discharge and bleeding was present at first, then stopped a few weeks in. This also meant her pain and contractions could have been real symptoms. Extreme cramping can occur up to a week after a miscarriage.
Except Mary's symptoms seemed to last for months, meaning Douglas's theory about the contractions being intentionally controlled was probably correct.
As for the hard mass in Mary's right side, that's never been explained. It's possible that even the most accomplished and skeptical doctors got carried away by Mary's story. Maybe they felt or saw things that weren't actually there.
Mary's convulsions and seizures were likely caused by severe infection. By inserting dead animals into her vagina, this was inevitable. Mary reported she felt intense pain when Anne put the carcasses in. By placing sharp objects like bones into her genitalia, it's possible Mary cut herself, leading to contamination.
Even without a laceration, inserting anything into the vagina impacts a woman's pH balance. pH is a measurement of how acidic or basic a substance is, and a healthy vagina is balanced between the two ends.
When the pH balance is off, bacteria grows more easily and can lead to things like yeast infections and urinary tract infections. The blood in her urine was likely a symptom of the latter.
The final swelling of Mary's cervix in the bathhouse wasn't a sign she was about to give birth. Instead, it was likely caused by the spreading of this infection.
Nowadays, Mary's case could be treated with antibiotics, but they were invented after her time. So the fact that Mary didn't die pulling off this hoax was a miracle in itself.
Once this information was exposed, Mary was imprisoned on charges of being a notorious and vile cheat. Despite the name-calling, people still gathered outside the Bridewell Prison in London to catch a glimpse of her.
King George I hated the attention Mary was getting. He wanted everyone to forget the fact that a peasant woman tricked him and other members of the royal court. He ordered her release in hopes the scandal would die down.
Meanwhile, the doctors who examined Mary tried to justify their involvement. St. Andre published a full account of the births, retracting his promise that they were real. Still, St. Andre lost all his clients, as well as his royal salary and duties. Nobody wanted to work with a man who had been duped so easily.
Mr. Howard's work faltered, then recovered. It was never made clear if he was in on the hoax, although Mary hinted at his connection. Meanwhile, Sir Richard and Douglas received credit for Mary's defrauding.
When she was released from prison, Mary went back to work as an agricultural day laborer. The next year, she gave birth to a baby girl named Elizabeth. By all intents and purposes, she continued living an ordinary life.
But there was nothing ordinary about Mary. She was solidified in history as the woman who fooled the world. She'd forever be Mary Toft, breeder of rabbits, and perhaps the greatest medical fraud of all time.
Thanks for listening to Medical Mysteries. For more information on Mary Toft, amongst the many sources we used, we found the book, The Girl Who Gave Birth to Rabbits, by Clifford A. Pickover, extremely helpful to our research.
You can find all episodes of Medical Mysteries and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify.
Medical Mysteries is a Spotify original from Parcast. It is executive produced by Max Cutler, sound design by Juan Borda, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, and Travis Clark. This episode of Medical Mysteries was written by Kit Fitzgerald, with writing assistance by Lori Gottlieb and Allie Wicker, fact-checking by Bennett Logan, and research by Brad Klein and Brian Petrus. Medical Mysteries stars Molly Brandenburg and Richard Rossner. Listeners, there's no better time to follow your heart and check out the hit Spotify original from Parcast, Blind Dating. Every Wednesday, find out if personality alone is enough to make a love connection. Follow Blind Dating free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.